Okay, so we're going beyond planes now to surfaces that can be curved. The next level up from a certain perspective is, whereas with planes you could have these equations where each term that was being added together had at most one power of a variable, now you can have powers of variables that add up to two. So x times y, z times z, x times x, y times z. You can still have the lower power terms, but now you have all of these quadratic terms. And it's more complicated than in two dimensions, right? Because there's just more ways. In two dimensions, you had the ellipses, the hyperbolas, the parabolas, which you could get with x squared, xy, and y squared, three different kinds of quadratic terms. Then there's six. It's getting a lot more complicated. The focus that we take is on certain special cases. And if you have enough special cases, then you can say, well, everything else is a rotation, and then maybe you translate it. So, like, take some random ellipsoid. It's like a ball, but stretched out some. And then the idea is, okay, well, an arbitrary ellipsoid, it may not be in the standard form, but I can rotate it, and then I can move it so that it's centered around the origin. And so you can reduce these to some standard forms. You just have to rotate things and slide them around to get them into the standard forms. Your book does a pretty good job of listing the standard forms. The ellipsoid one. In general, these can be rather complicated, but the standard form looks like this. Can you say about this? Well, you should think of it as a sphere, but with a standard sphere centered about the origin, except it doesn't quite have a radius, so to speak. It has an x radius and a y radius and a z radius. So you think of this, okay, there's an A, a B, and a C. And if you made a slice, say, if you forgot the y, for example, and just looked at x and z, then what does this look like? It looks like an ellipse equation. Right? So imagine kind of an elliptical cross-section there. And if you throw away any other variable, you get a similar result. If you throw away the x and you just look at the y and z equation, so basically making x zero, right? So you're looking at what's in the y z plane. It's another ellipse equation. And
decide which parts of this will all be visible. Some kind of ellipse is supposed to be.
And if we forgot about the z, so set z equal to 0, and you get a cross section in the xy plane, so you get another ellipse. And my picture is not doing it justice.
Probably meet around here, I'm guessing.
And those would be the three most important cross sections, but actually any cross section where you could set one of these variables instead of to 0 but to some other number. You get other ellipses. So actually, we could set x to various, or set z, say, to various positive values, and you would get smaller elliptical cross sections like that. And if you set them to negative values, you'd be on the bottom half of the ellipse, and you get some ellipse cross sections down there. And if you set x to various values, set x to some positive values, you get some cross sections for more pieces of the front of the ellipsoid. And these would again be elliptical cross sections. They just continue on the bottom side. And then there'd be cross sections where you set x negative, and those would be in the back. Maybe I should extend some of these cross sections at constant z for the back. And then for various y values, this was the cross section we were getting by setting y equal to 0. But you could make slices at various other constant positive values of y to go out this way, and slices at negative and out this way. And this is generally true for any of these markers. If you make slices by holding one of the variables constant, in the general case, again, even if it's some kind of slanted cross-section, you get the two-dimensional quadric curves. Now, why are we bothering to look at these kinds of surfaces? The answer is that you need to have some toolbox or reference list of some basic examples of actual surfaces later on, so that when you want to talk about the calculus of surfaces, you have some simple standard examples to refer to. And it's helpful to have some rough idea of, okay, if I see such and such a kind of equation, can I have some rough idea of what kind of surface is it? It's very helpful if you see an equation like this to recognize, oh, it's an ellipsoid, so it has an inside and it has an outside, and it's kind of like a ball, just distorted, and it helps a lot to have some visual intuition for what it's like. And so later on, you know, I ask you, okay, find me the tangent plane for such and such a point on this ellipsoid. You have a picture of your mind of what I'm asking for. So that's the reason that we bring in these things. We want to have some basic surfaces that we can discuss when we bring in the calculus. It's just like how if you want to talk about books, it helps if you've read some of the same books. So if you and I are familiar with the same surfaces, we can do some calculus with it. And have some common intuitions about what the answers should be. Familiar with some of these.
You may remember, let's see, an ellipse is like this. For emphasis, let me put a little plus sign here. Put a plus sign here. See, it's two positive quadratic terms adding up to one. And then a parabola, if you like, you could think of it as being written in this funny way. There's a positive. I suppose if you want to have it, if you want to allow the parabola to be downward opening, you put in that, you allow that term to be one. It's an upward opening parabola. You could put a negative sign in there to make it downward opening. And you could switch the variables if you want it to be sideways opening. Now, a hyperbola is where you have a positive term and a negative term, both quadratic, and their difference equals one. If you want to, see, as I've written it here, I think I should draw the parabola this way, right? If you look at this, you can see that any x value is possible, but not all y values are possible. So there's actually a gap in the y values. If you play around with this a little bit. So, the asymptotes should make an x. I'm tempted to do that. You notice there's one positive and one negative term. And there's an analogous phenomenon here. If you flip some of these signs, make one of them negative, say. What do you get? Let's say we flip the last sign. You get one kind of surface. And what if you flip two of the signs to make them negative? So we flip the y and z. Then this gives you yet another kind of surface. If you flip both of these signs and make them both negative, you've got two negative squares trying to equal a positive number, so there's no solution. So you never do that. That would just be the empty set, no curve at all.
If you want to review conic sections, you can go back. There's this whole chapter one that we skipped because it's stuff like polar coordinates and parametric curves, parametric equations, arc length. Those things should have been done in calculus two. Anyways, any of this stuff you want to review, of course, is back in chapter one. Think of this quadric surfaces here, conic sections going up to 3D. No one really thinks of them as slices of hypercones, but I suppose they could. Okay. As I was saying, there's a very nice list in the book. So you see, this is something that is not analogous to the 2D case. There's really only one kind of hyperbola. If I put the minus sign in front of the x squared and the positive sign in front of the y squared here, it's just like rotating one of these 90 degrees, basically, maybe doing a little scale change. So that here there's a gap in the x values. If I were to flip the signs, or gap in the y values. I'd flip the signs, it would have been a gap in the x values. But they all look the same. Modulo some rotation and stretching. Translating. But now there's something fundamentally different. Because there's 3 plus signs for an ellipsoid. If I just flip one of the signs, see, I get the hyperboloid of one sheet, as it's called. Looks like a cooling tower in a nuclear reactor. If you flip two of the signs, you get that, a hyperbolic two sheets. What's going on here? Is you can think of it as if you think of kind of the x squared and y squared as then divided by the a squared and the b squared to make some kind of skewed polar coordinate, a radius coordinate, measuring distance from the z-axis but kind of skewed, then there's this gap in the middle here. And that's because if you solve for this thing, it's equal to 1 plus something. So it has there's some minimum here. And the minimum is like this x squared over a squared plus y squared over b squared has to be at least 1. That's why this neck, so to speak, has a minimum kind of radius. Well, it's an elliptical neck, so there's not a true radius, just like there's kind of 3 different radii here. And then here it's different. Let's see. I guess the book is putting the minus signs on the x and y's. And if you solve this for z, you find that z has to be, well, z squared over c squared has to be 1 plus something. So that's why there's a gap in z value. Z has to be at least so big. And the way I've written it here, there would be a gap in the x values. If you solve this for x, you find that x squared over a squared has to be at least 1, because it's 1 plus some squares. So you end up with a gap in the x values. Like this. There's a hyperboloid of two sheets. So depending on where you put the minus signs, there'll be a different kind of gap, let's say. And if you had 3 minus signs, then you'd have 3 negative squares trying to add up to a positive number. No, not going to happen. So that would be the empty set again. And again, there's other possibilities, right? There's... See here where you have a parabola where you have a quadratic term, but then instead of the second quadratic term, like in here, you have just a linear term and there's no constant term. That's kind of a edge case. You can think of it as... you can either think of... imagine you had an ellipsoid, and you let one end of it, say, stay roughly fixed, and then the center of the ellipsoid was moving this way. Meanwhile, the ellipsoid was getting bigger and bigger. I think it was stretching out in one direction.
And in the limit, you could get what's called a paraboloid, an elliptic parabola to be precise. And the same is true in two dimensions. You can have every parabola, you can think of it as being very well approximated as the end of a very big, long, skinny ellipse. And that's actually true physically. Like this marker here, ignoring air resistance, it follows a parabolic trajectory, approximately. If you take into account the fact that the Earth is not an infinite plane but a sphere, it's actually following an extremely long, skinny elliptical trajectory. So what you saw was the tip of a very long ellipse. The other end would be around the Earth's core somewhere, right? So the parabolas are the limiting cases of very long ellipses. And you can think of the 3D version the same way. It's here's the elliptic paraboloid. You can think of this as the limiting case of a very long, skinny ellipsoid. So it's analogous to what we had over here. And then there's also a kind of a limiting case here, an elliptic cone. This is something that's kind of nice. If you thought of this in 2D, like a 2D slice of this, it would just look like an X. Or if you made a different kind of slice, you could get a hyperbola. And where if you slice right through the middle point of the cone, you get an X. Otherwise you normally get a hyperbola if the slice hits both parts. Or if you make a slice that just hits one part, then you get an ellipse. Or if you make a very special slice that's actually parallel to part of the cone, so it hits one half, but just barely, you get a parabola. So the slices of the cone, it looks like a double cone, right? They're just called a cone. Those are the traditional conic sections. But you may want to, if you want to, you can be pedantic and you can include a kind of degenerate case like this. Yeah, I think there's a degenerate hyperbola. Okay. And then there's this other thing, hyperbolic paraboloid, which you could kind of imagine this thing here, the hyperboloid of one sheet. Imagine kind of, think, roughly speaking, you have here, the surface here is kind of like a horse saddle. It curves in one sense it curves this way, and in another sense it curves the other way, and that's not very helpful. Okay, it's kind of like a horse saddle. And you can sort of imagine stretching this thing out, like I suggest imagining stretching out an ellipse. This kind of thing. A circular cone. A circular cone is good enough if you just want to make slices and get all the traditional conic sections, but we allow for this to be wider one way than it is the other way. So it's more generally an elliptic cone. And
And the book is very nice. It talks about how if you make different slices through different planes, hold different variables constant, what kind of cross sections do you get?
Okay, so there's our. And then, of course, we have this one. No, I didn't. I got mixed up. Here we go.
In some sense, the degenerate hyperbola here, the x, algebraically, this is analogous to the elliptic cone. And then there's the two kinds of paraboloids. Right? So think about these names. The paraboloids have a linear term set equal to some quadratic terms. And all of the then the ellipses and the ellipsoids have all positive quadratic terms equal to 1. And then the hyperbolas and the hyperboloids have a mix of signs on some quadratic terms that add up to 1. So the naming convention does make a lot of sense, at least in the sense that they're algebraically grouping like with like. So this one just looks like a bowl. With this choice of signs, it's upward opening. You could imagine putting 2 negative signs here to make it downward opening, or if you like, putting a negative sign with a Z. But the point is you've got, just for emphasis, on this side where the 2 quadratics are, the signs are matching. Right? If the signs are mismatching, you get something rather different. These are the opposite side. This is the horse saddle type shape. I always find it rather challenging to draw. Something like that. Easier now. Some of these things you could say solve for Z and graph them on your calculator and get at least half the surface. Nowadays it feels like cheating because I can just type in some crazy thing into Wolfram Alpha and bam, give me some kind of plot and maybe even a classification. Y squared over 3 plus z squared over 1. For emphasis, let me put a little plus sign over z. 2 positive terms, 1 negative term. So I'm predicting it's going to be a hyperboloid of 1 sheet. One of those things. All right. I just put the negative term on the negative sign on the y instead of on the z like I did there. Or
I guess you can put on the X too. Let's see if it gives me anything useful.
1 sheeted hyperbolic.
There it is.
I think you can them for a subscription, and you can make it interactive and rotate it and stuff like that if you want. I haven't done that personally. I mean, that is not for me either. And a lot of the stuff you can just put in something. Here's a hyperbolic paraboloid. I can predict what's going to happen just by looking at the algebra where the signs. And I don't know, it's got that kind of a weird angle. It looks kind of funny. Looks kind of like a chair, I guess. You can kind of see the horse saddle shape. All right. Okay. Your turn. What should we look at?
X squared over 10
equals, what should be on the, is that it, or should there be more?
I'd say minus y squared over 5.
Okay.
And minus z squared over 6.
Okay. And is it going to equal 1?
1.
All right. Okay. So that should be 2 sheets, right? Nice thing about it, at least with these standard forms, where I've not tried to handle the full general beast, I can just look at it and just look at, you know, what the signs are, and I can predict what kind of surface I'm going to get. Okay, but there's one little thing we've been. Yes.
This is a question.
Yes.
Is the x always going to be plus, like positive?
Let's change it. Negative. All right. Well, that would be the empty set, but let's put the plus sign on the z.
So there always has to be a plus sign somewhere.
Well, if you have a bunch of quadratic terms, right? I mean, how do you get it to add up to 1, right? If these were all negative, then the left side would be 0 or negative, and the right side would be 1. And
then there would be no way.
There'd be no solution. It wouldn't be a surface. It would be an empty set.
Oh, I see. So there's always a plus sign.
Yes, if you want it to equal plus 1, you need a plus sign somewhere on the other side.
Oh, I get it.
If you were to equal that to...
See, empty set. Nothing.
If you equal that to 2 or some kind of value that's bigger than 1, would it just widen it, or would it...
Yeah. I mean, think about the ellipsoid. I mean, the x, y, and z can't get too big, because if they're all really big, right? Even in fact, if even one of them is really big, then the left side will be bigger than 1, right? But if we made this a 2, then we could make things bigger over here. Imagine though, if you had a 2 here, divide both sides by 2, and so you have a bunch of 2s in here, and then bring them inside the squares. So if you change this to a 2, you're going to rescale the whole thing to make it the square root of 2 bigger. So it would increase the size by about 40%. Okay, so yeah, all negative squares equaling 1 is empty, so nothing. But what about this, though? Okay, so we said we need at least 1 positive, but... there's another kind of number besides positive and negative numbers. There's 0. So what if we just deleted a term entirely? Okay. So there's going to be a little interpretation problem. Wolfram Alpha gives me a hyperbola, but I wanted something 3D.
So you just...
you would put a Z?
Well, I could put it there. That maybe won't be real explicit. Plus 0 times Z squared. Maybe that'll get the message across that I want a 3D surface. No, see, it just ignores it.
Because it's a 0, so there's technically no Z.
Well, But this is where the part about cylinders comes in. So see, there's a little, that's another possibility. What if I had, think about it this way, in set builder notation, if I have x, comma, y, comma, z, I want all the points in 3D space that satisfy the equation, say, x squared minus y squared equals 1. What would that look like? You make the 3D graph, well, so you're asking yourself, what could you have for x and y's, right? You could look at this to get some insight into it. X squared is equal to 1 plus y squared, which is at least 1. So the magnitude of x is also at least 1. So x is greater than 1 or x is less than or equal to negative 1. That's what I was talking about with the gap in the x values. But if I'm getting a gap in the x values, then I drew this one wrong the first time. I think so, yes. I must have got mixed up in my mind. It's the gap in the x values. Right? Okay, so there's a hyperbola, right, at say z equals 0, right? The book calls this a trace. Right? I like to call it a cross section. Anyways, the slice of it is equal to 0. Right? It's just going to look like a hyperbola, just like the computer graph was a moment ago. But what if we looked at the z equals 5 trace or whatever? It would be the same trace, right? Yeah, it's just going to be at z equals 5. So it's going to look like this. It's a cylinder. If you want to get technical, you say it's made up of a bunch of parallel lines or something like that. So, if you have an equation with only two variables, but you want to have a solution set that includes a third variable, then what you're getting is a cylinder. So this is a hyperbolic cylinder. It's a cylinder of a hyperbola. So whenever you leave out one of the variables in the equation, but you still demand a 3D solution, so you get what's called a cylinder. So those are the kind of tricky edge cases that I didn't put here. Right? Is what if you make some of these signs zero? Then you can get cylinders. Okay. All right. Okay. So let's do a little classification problem here.
that's eight of them. This is a table you have to fill in.
Can we try to draw it, sir, somehow? Like, if you start to explain what it is,
I've given you a lot of technical terminology, so for most of these, you should be able to use a word or a sequence of words. There's a few of them that are you might have a little trouble, but. If you have one of them as just a drawing, maybe send me the drawing. Maybe we can figure out some words for it. But most of them should match something in the book. Is to get a computer to show you what they all look like. Now with the, if you run into cylinder type problems, you'll have to use your imagination perhaps, like I did there. Wolfram Alpha didn't do everything for me. Any questions? Okay, so there's a homework batch due tomorrow, 11:30. Sure. Yeah. 5 minutes. 1 minute.